Hello and welcome to Gilead. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Soren Hotchire, the Communications and Admin Hoss here. Last Sunday, recent graduate with a Master's in Divinity, Alexa Dava, gave a lovely sermon asking, what if debt was a good thing? What if owing other people, owing our community, taking care of each other, and giving reparations was a good thing? This is our last sermon from our Pride and Other Virtue series, where we wondered if all the sins we learned along were secretly virtues. Take a listen from Sunday, June 18th.
So one of my required classes growing up in Christian high school was personal finance. And Mrs. Burnham taught it. And she was our teacher, and teacher is kind of used loosely in this sense because when we took her class, her curriculum was basically just watching Dave Ramsey videos. And so for context, Dave Ramsey is this conservative financial advisor that a lot of Americans rely on for financial tips. And he's the kind of person who, during the pandemic, when stimulus checks were being announced, he said, I don't believe in stimulus checks because if $600 or $400 changes your life, you are pretty much already screwed. You got other issues going on. Yeah. So he makes his money telling people that being in debt is the number one thing to avoid. So for Dave Ramsey, being in debt is a sin. And when you make choices that make you further in debt, he says you're being irresponsible. And yeah, we already know there's no way to live in this economy without incurring some kind of financial debt or loan. But how does Dave Ramsey approach being in debt as if it were some kind of sin? Like, where does this come from? So this conflation of human sin and debt can be traced all the way to the Middle Ages when Anselm of Canterbury used the language of repaying debt to explain why Jesus died. So in Anselm's age of overlords and servants, he said that in the same way servants in his time owed overlords honor, humans owed honor to God, and human sin was dishonor to God. In his time, one atoned for a crime by receiving punishment or providing satisfaction to the injured person. And humans then were put in a bind for Anselm because God didn't want to perpetually punish us, but at the same time, we could never satisfy God. So Anselm said, that's why God, through Jesus, came to satisfy the crime of our sin. And if you've been at this church for a while, you know that we don't really buy into this idea that it's our fault that Jesus died on the cross. We don't need to be bailed out. There's nothing wrong about us that Jesus had to atone for. And so the kind of debt that I'm talking about has more to do with the question of what we owe to the people who lay claim to us. It has more to do with our social, relational debt. So Christians, because of Anselm, are often encouraged to be quick to forgive and quick to let people off the hook when something is done wrong. A basic tenet of justice is that when someone causes harm, the perpetrator must correct that harm. But that leads to Christians overemphasizing forgiveness. And so Dave Ramsey is one example of how it's gotten to the point that being owed something or owing something to others is seen as a moral wrong, even in times of crisis. The Book of Ruth opens on a migrant family in crisis. Elimelech, his wife Naomi, and their two sons migrate to Moab because there's a famine in their hometown of Bethlehem. In the very first lines of the book, while the family's in Moab, Elimelech, the patriarch, dies. So the sons find women to marry in Moab, Orpah and Ruth, and they live well for about 10 years until tragedy strikes the family again, and both sons die too. Left in the wake of the men's death are three widows, totally cut off from any resources in a world in which women can't survive alone. So Naomi, the mother-in-law, already knows this, so she releases her daughters-in-law from any obligation to stay with her. You don't owe me anything. If you stay with me, there's no hope for you. Go home. So one of the daughters, Orpah, returns home, and Ruth, like a lot of us know, insists on staying with Naomi, even though to do so would put her in a deeper crisis. Naomi even says sarcastically to Ruth, "What are you going to do? Wait around till I have another kid and he's old enough to marry you? No." Still, for some reason that the story doesn't say, Ruth stays with Naomi through the crisis. Anthropologist Anna Singh cites economic fragility, extinction of animal species, and rising water levels as examples of how our world is in crisis, saying that crisis is actually not the exception, but the condition of our time. In May, the U.S. Surgeon General, which like I didn't even know we had until this was published, but he published a study saying that reports of loneliness are so high that he declared loneliness to be a health epidemic. As attacks on trans lives increase across the country, conditions for our trans siblings are bleak, which is another layer of crisis for our time. So Ruth is traditionally read as a story about a virtuous woman whose loving kindness should be taken as an example for all, but I would like to see it as a story about the cyclical relationship between two women who support each other in the face of crisis. In the beginning of Ruth, Ruth takes up an oath laying claim to Naomi, saying, "Do not press me to leave you, to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you die, I will die. And there will I be buried." Basically, you're simply the best. I'm going to be here, follow you. There's a line about dying, doing it unto death or something like that. So if Ruth had chosen to return home, Naomi would have traveled alone to her home country, vulnerable to whoever or whatever else she might have encountered on her way to Bethlehem. In laying claim to Naomi, even unto death, Ruth increased Naomi's possibilities for survival. In Filipino virtue ethics, there's this Tagalog phrase to describe the relational debt incurred when one person helps another person. It's called utang na loob. And utang is the Tagalog word for debt, and put together, utang na loob simply means debt of the inner self, or debt of solidarity, debt of reciprocity. And essentially, an utang na loob relationship begins when someone performs an act of goodwill, like Ruth choosing to stay with Naomi. And this act, part of utang na loob, is that it has to be reciprocated in some kind of way at some point in the future. But there are no hard deadlines or metrics for repaying the initial act. Utang na loob isn't a quid pro quo exchange, not about holding debts over people to control or manipulate them. And in a true utang na loob relationship, it's up for you to decide how you show up and how you contribute. And it's up to you to kind of feel that out. So after Naomi and Ruth arrive in Bethlehem, Naomi has a chance to repay her debt to Ruth. So Naomi uses her cultural capital to scheme with Ruth to advance their joint economic security. Naomi, you know, tells Ruth to go to Boaz under the cover of nightfall and essentially propose marriage to him. She'll tell Boaz to fulfill his obligation as Elimelech's next kinman redeemer and secure Ruth and Naomi's future. Some feminist Hebrew Bible scholars today argue that Ruth in this story was used. Ruth sacrificed her entire possibility for survival and sticking with Naomi, while Naomi gave up some cultural knowledge. In the end, Ruth bears Boaz's child, but it's Naomi who is celebrated and ultimately remembered, and it's Naomi who's honored as the mother of Obed, and it's Naomi who the townswomen all call blessed. But this story was never about Ruth's status as an individual. It was about the relationship between two women on the social margins struggling to survive a crisis. The utang na loob between Ruth and Naomi is not about equal repayments of obligations, but about Ruth's commitment to Naomi unto death, and how fulfilling those obligations actually serves to secure both of their futures. This weekend, Black Americans celebrate Juneteenth. For everyone else, we have a chance to reflect on the debts we still owe to these families who built the country since its founding. And as a citizen in this country, I have to ask what I owe to these families who have been here, yet face more barriers to living a whole and good life than I do. Reparations, for churchgoers like us, reparations are about correcting political injustices, but it's also a spiritual ethic that we are all called to practice and to live by. And today, as Gilead lays claim to and blesses in a new PDP, and as we lay claim to, and as they, the PDP, lays claim to us, we have a chance to reflect on what we owe to each other as we work to be a church surviving and resisting this white, heteronormative, patriarchal capitalism. Laying claim to others means owing them something of ourselves. Our communities, not just Gilead, but any that we care about, requires that we show up, that we depend on others when we need it, and that we are dependable when we have something others need. Ruth and Naomi were marginalized widows. They occupied the furthest outposts of social identity for their time and worked to collaborate and survive conditions at that social location. And as the queer storytelling bar church that we claim to be, we too are a church at the outposts of churches, as you've heard repeated over and over again tonight. Our survival hinges on our relationships. It hinges on the quality of how we show up to each other, not treating our commitments and social debts as burdens, but as gifts, which strengthen our connection and make possible our chances for survival. Amen.